Joanne.
Thank you very much. I should start out by telling you how we got Denise to come and speak to us today. It's because we are great friends with her parents. Connie and I have been in many musical shows in Cincinnati at the Cincinnati Country Club. And then about 2 years after that, she and her husband bought the condominium next door to us, which we live in every summer in Cincinnati. It is my pleasure to introduce their daughter, Mrs. Denise Morrison. Denise is the Executive Vice President and Chief Operating Officer of Campbell Soup Company. Campbell Soup is a very old company. It was founded in 1869. It is probably the most iconic brand in any company. Denise leads all of the company's global businesses, including North America Soup, Sauces, Beverages, and Pepperidge Farm. Her appointment to her present position and her election to the Campbell Soup Board of Directors was in anticipation of her succeeding the current Chief Executive Officer when he steps down on July 31st of this year. So come this summer, Denise will join the very small group of females who are CEOs of Fortune 500 companies. Denise joined Campbell's in April of 2003. Previously, she served as Executive Vice President and General Manager of Kraft Foods, Snacks, and Confection Division, responsible for leading brands like Planters Nuts and Lifesavers. Denise began her career in the sales organization with Procter & Gamble in Boston. Denise is a founding member of the current board member of the Healthy Weight Commitment Foundation, an organization composed of manufacturers and retailers designed to combat obesity in the marketplace, workplace, and in the schools through the communication and education. Denise has received many awards. Just a few: Woman of Distinction from the Heart Association of New Jersey in 2010. Top Woman Grocer from Progressive Grocer Magazine 2008, 9, and 10. One of the top 50 women to be watched, given by the Wall Street Journal in 2007. Denise graduated magna cum laude from Boston College and was inducted in the Order of Cross and Crown Honor Society for academics and extracurricular activities. It is my joy to present Denise Morrison.
Good afternoon, everyone. Joe, thank you so much for those kind words. I'm very excited to be here today. I'm probably the only person that you'll meet that has gone from nuts to soup. So I think of the many men in my life, other than my husband Tom, Mr. Peanut, Mr. Whipple. So anyway, so much has happened since I've gotten the invitation to be here today from Bumpy and Joe Frazier. It's been a remarkable year. And when I initially received the request, I was running the North America business in Campbell's. But on October 1st, as Joe said, I was appointed Executive Vice President and Chief Operating Officer in anticipation that I'll succeed our CEO, Doug Conant, on August 1st. Just so that you know how I feel about this, I'm really honored and humbled to be able to succeed such a wonderful leader in Doug and also to run such a great company. It's funny because I had a moment where, for me, being a high achiever, it was all about getting to be the CEO of a company. And now, and in the last several years, I realized that it's not just getting it, it's the opportunity to build a great company. And so I am really excited about that. I also want to take a minute and just acknowledge my parents, Connie and Denny Sullivan. Stand up. If it wasn't for them, I wouldn't be here in many different ways. So. This is about the first time in my career they've ever heard me speak, so I wasn't nervous about you guys. It was really about them. and also my husband, Tom, for being here. Tom is wearing the Campbell's tie, in case you haven't seen. But he's truly the best partner that anyone could ever have. And I think it's because of my parents and my upbringing that I'm standing before you today. In 2007, the Wall Street Journal actually ran an article on my family, and it was raising women to be leaders. And my sisters, I have three other sisters, and all of us are pretty high achievers. And I attribute that to the way we were brought up. My dad used to take us on, you know, most dads take you to the park. We got to go to the library. And we had to pick out a book, read it, and write a report on it for our father. And I actually think that today I love to read, and I think that's because of that experience. My mother taught us that ambition is a part of femininity, and we weren't allowed to use the word "I can't" in my household. I remember I didn't make the cheerleaders. There was a cheerleader here, and I was absolutely devastated. So I went out for baton twirling, which was the only other woman's sport in that day. And I can remember I came home and told my mother that I wanted to twirl fire on the football field. Most mothers would say, "Are you insane?" My mother sewed my costume and stood out on the football field with a big blanket while I did that. And I just have to tell you that I'm still twirling fire on my job. But, you know, it also I developed some skills in childhood that I've used forever in the business world. For example, my parents had job jars, and each one of us had our name on it. And we could come downstairs and pull out our chores, and we had to accomplish the chores by the end of the week. We could negotiate and barter those chores. But what we learned about being part of a family team, negotiation skills, believe me, we had some good ones, and delivering on your objectives by the end of the week. So all good lessons. But today, you know, I'm really here to share with you some of the past, the present, and the future of the Campbell Soup Company. And it is a privilege to be a steward of a brand that marks so much warmth and familiarity. It's one of the most trusted brands in the world, with more than 1.9 billion units of Campbell Soup sold per year in over 120 countries around the world. But I'm getting ahead of myself. I want to start at the beginning. As Joe said, in 1869, Joseph Campbell was a fruit merchant, and Abram Anderson, an icebox manufacturer, formed a partnership to can tomatoes, vegetables, jellies, condiments, and mincemeat. They opened the company's first plant in Camden, New Jersey. And 7 years later, Anderson left the partnership, and Arthur Dorrance and Joseph Campbell formed a new company. The two men worked on building the business, and in 1894, Campbell retired, and Arthur Dorrance succeeded him as the president of the Joseph Campbell Preserve Company. And they made the first soup ever. Tomato, of course. And just a little aside, 25 million people eat tomato soup once a week in this country. It's amazing. How many of you have had it this week? Good. So at the end of the 19th century, several key decisions were made that created the company's legacy. First, in 1897, Arthur Dorrance reluctantly hired his 24-year-old nephew, Dr. John T. Dorrance, as a chemist at a token wage of $7.50 a week. Dr. Dorrance then went on to develop a formula which we now fondly know as condensed soups. By removing the water, the volume of a can of soup could be reduced from 32 ounces to 10.5 ounces, and the price was lowered from about 34 cents to 10 cents. So he was the first pioneer of sustainability. And a year later, a company executive attended the annual Cornell Penn football game and was so taken with Cornell's brilliant new red and white uniforms, he convinced Campbell's to use the colors on the soup labels. Brilliant marketing, right? Okay. The company began its first advertising campaign ever on New York City streetcars. And in 1900, Campbell's Soups won a medallion of excellence at the Paris Exposition. And that medallion still continues to be on our icon varieties today, tomato, chicken noodle, and cream of mushroom. Well, under the leadership of Arthur Dorrance, John Dorrance, and Arthur C. Dorrance, the company began to expand its product offering and its advertising, including the Campbell Kids and its familiar "Mm-mm Good" slogan, in the mid-1930s and set a course for success. The company then began a series of acquisitions with V8, could have had a V8, Swanson, Pepperidge Farm, and also expanded its geographic footprint internationally and into Mexico. And Campbell experienced a surge of popularity in the 1960s due to a pop artist, Andy Warhol. In fact, his paintings are all over my office. He painted the first Campbell soup can in 1962 because, in his words, quote, "I used to drink soup. I used to have the same lunch every day for 20 years. Love that guy. At first, Campbell's wasn't sure what to do with Andy. Believe it or not, his painting bordered on copyright infringement. I could just see our legal department. Should we sue him? You know? But luckily, we came to our senses and we didn't sue him. And Andy ended up being one of the best ambassadors for our brand. And about 5 years ago, one of Andy's paintings sold at Sotheby's for about $5.5 million. Not too bad for painting your lunch. In 1970, the company's sales topped $1 billion and also included its newly created food service division, the acquisition of Godiva Chocolate, which we recently divested, and my mother has not spoken to me since. We can still get it in the company store, though. But some of the brands that you're familiar with today were created during those times, like SpaghettiOs, Chunky Soup, and Prego Pasta Sauce. And Prego was actually a favorite family recipe created by one of Campbell's chefs at the time. So that's enough about the past. Let me talk a little bit about the now. And I'll fast forward, actually, to 2001. And that's when Doug Conant began his tenure that year. He came to Camden to a company that had faltered on a number of fronts: product quality, consumer marketing, and innovation. Investors had begun to lose confidence in us, and our shares were losing value. And Doug put into place what was called our transformation plan. And he lured me in 2003 to help him, along with a number of my peers, to turn around the Campbell Soup Company. So as a leadership team, we mapped out a plan for revitalizing our company, and we began investing in our organization. We sought to improve product quality, enhance our consumer spending, replenish our innovation pipeline, and rebuild our organization infrastructure. The plan was designed to return the company to being competitive. And over the three-year horizon of the plan, we did transform. We restored investments into R&D. We strengthened the innovation pipeline. We improved our productivity and our margins and created a strong balance sheet. And I think one of the most important things we did was we worked to win in the workplace to restore the faith of our employees in our company. And it worked. The following year, we introduced Campbell's Soup at Hand, a convenient soup for on-the-go eating. We also unveiled IQ Maximizer, our innovative gravity shelving that is in the stores for merchandising soup. We heard from consumers that soup was the hardest category to shop for next to cough and cold. People would go to the shelf especially like after I turn 40, you can't even see. You go to the shelf and it's like the sea of red and white. And so IQ Maximizer was a real breakthrough to organize our soup so people could find their favorite varieties. And it's alive and well today, and we've improved it a couple times. We also made soup easier to open with the EZO pop-top lid. And we made soup more convenient to eat by introducing microwavable bowls in our ready-to-serve brands, Chunky and Select. So perhaps the innovation, though, that I'm most proud of came in 2006. And for too long, Campbell's soup had been the poster child for high-sodium products. And we wanted to be the poster child for wellness. I can remember a team of people sitting around the table making this declaration, and then we looked at each other and said, how are we going to do that? But we had a breakthrough. We found a natural lower sodium sea salt that still had salty taste but was low in sodium. And we went to work with R&D and marketing to come up with a great line of soup that had reduced sodium and great taste. At that time, I was running our USA business and worked with the team to commercialize this line of Healthy Request soup. And we were able to successfully expand it, not only across soup, but across our V8 beverages, our sauces, and our bread, and forge a significant partnership with the American Heart Association. And as Joe said, we've been recognized by the American Heart Association for our work. I actually went, and I went to Cleveland Clinic. I went to a lot of different medical groups as I was developing these soups to get feedback to see if we were on the right track. And it was just a moment for me a couple years ago when I stood with the head of the American Heart Association at the New York Stock Exchange and actually rang the bell and said, this is amazing in such a few years. But I tell you, the success of our transformation plan can be summed up in a few key metrics. We grew shareholder returns by 64% versus the S&P Packaged Foods Index at 38% and the S&P 500 at 13% from July 2004 to July 2010. Our organic net sales have had a six-year compound annual growth rate of 2.8%, and for a very large and mature business in food, that's good. We increased our U.S. soup net sales by $400 million from 2001 to 2010. And our EBIT margins have grown top tier in the food business, and we've increased adjusted EPS, our cash flow, and our adjusted return on invested capital. And we're very, very proud of this record. We are a high-performance organization that pays very close attention to our metrics. But now there's the future to address. And one of the reasons why Campbell's Soup has been around for 140 years is because you have to constantly pay attention to the changes that are going on in the marketplace and with consumers and deliver things to consumers before they know they want it. So as I get ready to embark as the next leader of this great company, I do have a few thoughts to share with you on where we're headed. And we're facing a new reality. And it's a reality of continuous change. The needs and tastes and expectations of our consumers change. The business models and priorities of our customers change. The composition and strategies of our competitors change. Our employees' perspectives about the workplace changes. And companies that do not embrace change do not fare well with it. In the last 2 years, change has come to our food industry with dramatic impact, and there will surely be more. And there's no doubt in my mind that many of the forces that will shape growth in the food industry in the coming decade will be quite different from those that shaped the last one. And as always, change is bringing challenges, but also enormous opportunities. And at a high level, our key priority is to continue to create value. And value creation will come from stabilizing and then profitably growing our net sales while managing margins and maintaining our strong return on invested capital and cash flow. But in a nutshell, our key challenge as a company is to deliver a step change in our profitable net sales growth. And we recognize that the world that will tackle this will be different from the world that we've known before. And there are many reasons for that, and I'll mention just a few today. As we know, we're witnessing a profound shift in the distribution of global GDP growth. The growth in emerging markets is transforming the global economy and certainly the food industry.
It's expected that in the next 10 years, developing markets like India and China will generate 1 billion new consumers who will fuel as much as 70% of the growth in our industry. It will be extremely important for Campbell to connect successfully with these consumers. We're also experiencing major demographic changes in many developed markets. In Campbell's primary market, the United States, Hispanics are now the fastest growing ethnic group. These are consumers with very distinctive tastes and preferences about food. And historically, we have not taken full advantage of the significant capabilities for meeting the needs of these consumers. This must change. And of course, around the world, we're seeing the immense impact of generational change. Today, the generation often tagged as the millennials, some of them who are among us now, represent 80 million consumers who spend nearly $200 billion a year in the U.S. alone. And their habits and views of the world are very different from their parents. Electronic communication has been central to their lives virtually from the time they were born. And it has given them radically different expectations about the availability of information and about their connections with cultures other than their own. And these consumers have a keen appreciation for taste adventure, intense concerns about nutrition, and very strong views about convenience. They are also fabulous employees, though at times high maintenance. And although we've welcomed the millennials into the workplace, we have not yet built effective bridges to them as consumers, and we must do so now. In the meantime, baby boomers are going strong. They still represent 80 million consumers, but account for nearly one-third of the total consumer spending in the United States. And if they have aged, myself excluded, of course, the boomers' attitudes towards food have changed markedly, and we must change with them. And they're increasingly conscious about the relationship between their diets and their health and well-being, and they are, of course, determined to live forever. So in addition, as we know only too well, virtually all consumers have emerged from the recession, and some of them haven't emerged from the recession yet, with a very different attitude towards value and very different shopping and purchasing behaviors than many of them had before. The much chronicled transformation of the food consumer is real, and I don't believe that will change anytime soon. So at Campbell's, as we reflect on these major consumer dynamics, we're also mindful of many other critical trends. For example, it's now predicted that global demand for commodities will increase 30% in the next 10 years. This will occur against a backdrop of growing consumer concerns around environmental sustainability and probably more stringent regulation. We also know that as birth rates decline and populations aged in developed economies, improved productivity will be an imperative for all businesses, including the food industry. I believe that food companies that understand and harness opportunities inherent in the trends of the global economy will be best ready to compete successfully over time and provide strong returns to shareholders. As we focus intensely on building our plans for Campbell, we have been repeatedly impressed by the potential that exists within our company to leverage these changes in the world around us. I am extremely excited and energized by the new avenues of growth that the forces of change are unleashing for us. So looking forward to the second half of this year and into next year, we're going to focus on 5 growth drivers that will enable us to connect better with our consumers. These drivers have worked very well for us in healthy beverages and baked snacks and in some of the faster-growing segments of our soup business. They are superior consumer insights, brand marketing excellence, customer leadership, accelerated breakthrough innovation, and relentless cost and margin management. I'll highlight just 3 of these factors. First, we believe that brand marketing excellence is the most effective way to strengthen connections with our consumers. We are in 85% of U.S. households, which is an enviable position. But we need to leverage that penetration for higher usage. And we have a unique opportunity to surprise, excite, and delight all these consumers in new ways. This means shifting spending away from dependence on price promotion and more towards brand building. We study the consumer's path to purchase to grab their attention, get on their list, and get into the cart and out of the pantry. So effective advertising is the best way to get out of the pantries and onto the table and drive increased usage. And we need to apply fresh thinking to our advertising message, and we're well along on that road. We're also broadening our consumer reach in interactive social media, from Facebook and Twitter to smartphones and iPhone apps to dispense recipes and make it easier for consumers in the digital world. And we'll continue to increase our investment in social media to ensure that we engage more effectively with younger consumers. The second important factor is innovation. And over the last several years, we have tried to improve the health and wellness of our portfolio, especially in our soup business, while maintaining great taste. And these investments have eliminated the sodium barrier. We have today more than 200 products in the marketplace with reduced sodium. And we offer consumers a wide choice of soups that taste great and meet their personal nutritional needs and lifestyles. Campbell's leadership in sodium reduction has placed us firmly ahead of our competition. And with the more recent changes in the government's dietary guidelines, the Let's Move campaign initiated by the White House, and new front-of-pack labeling that's coming, this leadership is all the more significant. So next year, we're going to substantially expand our range of Healthy Request heart-healthy soups and add 12 new recipes to that line for more consumer choice. But we have achieved sufficient scale in sodium reduction, and we believe we need to drive more breakthrough innovation. So, one of the things we're introducing next year is a new line of Campbell Slow Kettle soups made with patience, not preservatives. It's a line of contemporary soups with exquisite taste, and we actually have master culinary chefs on our staff that have worked with these recipes. They're targeted to young adults, and they're looking for premium experiences, culinary experiences every day. They set a new standard for quality that rivals fresh soup and will be delivered to the consumer in clear packaging that showcases their appearance. And so we're very excited about Campbell's Slow Kettle. We had a limited test market this year on Campbell's Harvest Orange tomato soup. This is a proprietary tomato that we've actually grown in California that has antioxidants and a really unique flavor. And so it delivers a culinary twist on our iconic Campbell tomato soup. And consumer response was very positive in the test market, so we're rolling that out. And in the cooking area, we're introducing Swanson Flavor Boost. It's a versatile new concentrated flavor designed by our chefs, and it's for skillet cooking. So we're trying to get more into the dinner occasion and occupy the white space between broth and bouillon. So these products are just a sampling of the early results of a major new innovation agenda that we're now driving across all of our businesses. And we know that consumers are looking for exciting tastes, nutritional breakthroughs, and innovative products and packaging, all at affordable prices. And so given the profound changes in consumer shopping behavior, we also know that to deliver profitable net sales growth, we must innovate with bigger ideas and bolder execution at the right price value for the benefits offered to win our consumers' precious dollars and their loyalty. And to nurture these innovation initiatives with talent and resources, we actually reorganized and formed a new breakthrough innovation team at Campbell's that will be hard at work. The third key factor I'll touch upon is our imperative to fund our growth through superior cost and margin management. We've had a very strong track record of improving margins, and we've done extensive work across our supply chain for productivity that reduces our total delivered costs. But for over 140 years, our soup making has evolved from a simple process to making soup one recipe at a time. We have an opportunity to reduce the cost of our complexity in what we're calling soup common platform. For example, We probably have over 100 cuts of carrots. And we ask consumers about that. They say, who cares? So we're getting to a reasonable number of cuts of carrots. But that gives you an idea, because you have to keep inventory on all of those. And you have to, you know, do, again, one recipe at a time. So we believe we can continue to offer value to our consumers and create value for our shareholders with SuperCommon platform. So we do have a lot of other businesses that I could talk about today, but in the interest of time, because I do want to give some time for questions, you know, let me just touch on the fact that our healthy beverages driven by V8 is a great, robust business. Innovation in that area has been the introduction of V8 V-Fusion. What we found was only 30% of consumers like the taste and texture of a tomato-based juice. And so what we were able to do to solve the consumer's vegetable gap was create V8 V-Fusion, which is a full serving of fruit and a full serving of vegetables with a better texture and also tastes like a fruit juice. And so we've developed ways that consumers can get their vegetables and enjoy a different taste experience. We're going to be introducing V8 energy shots and V8 energy drinks this year to reach younger consumers. And in baked snacks, and we have Pepperidge Farm, and we have a business called Arnott's in Australia, which both are large, growing, robust businesses. In fact, I just came back from Australia last week, where I got to tour that market and watch our famous Tim Tam cookies be produced. And it was a wonderful trip. It's just very hard to get there. but our baked snacks business is wonderful. So I'm going to challenge all of you to go to your supermarket and look for our new delicious Milano melts. I know my mother has already ordered a truckload to arrive to Marco Island. And it really is amazing. We took the Milano cookie, and we've actually found a way, technology-wise, to put gooey chocolate inside. It is to die for. So the other innovation has been in our Goldfish line. Our Goldfish is the number one kid snack in the world. And we've launched baked natural cracker chips. But the other thing we've done is we've moved Goldfish into bread, you know, because kids, they all want the crust off the bread. And now they have this adorable Goldfish bread that they can have their sandwiches on to add some fun to their wholesome lunch. So the only other thing I wanted to touch on is that we actually entered Russia and China a few years ago. Two emerging markets where we are trying to establish a business because we see very big opportunity there. You know, if we get 3% of the eatings of soup in those markets, it's bigger than the business in the United States. 3%. These people eat soup every day. It's just homemade. And so the opportunity to convert some of that homemade behavior to packaged food, now that the middle class is forming and there's more disposable income, is a huge opportunity for our company. And we've done a lot of learning, and we have learned a lot. But as so many before us have found out, that these markets require patience and endurance. And we haven't created successful businesses yet, but we continue to put the pieces in place. We're very excited. We just announced a new joint venture with Swire Pacific in China. And we also have a presence in Malaysia, Indonesia, and in Mexico. And so we consider the international opportunity enormous for Campbell's, given the trends that we're facing. So I am thrilled to be at the helm of this iconic company and look forward to leading Campbell's impressive future. And I also want to thank you so much from the bottom of my heart to give me the opportunity to speak with you today. As you can see, I'm very passionate about food, and I'm passionate about my company, and very grateful. And now I'll take your questions.
We have a lot of questions, so we're going to get to them right away. Do you manufacture only in the U.S. or others in are also in other countries? Which is your strongest overseas market?
I would say our strongest overseas market is Australia. We are the Nabisco of Australia. It's a biscuit business. We have a full range of cookies and crackers. We also do have a soup, sauce, and beverage business there, and a pretty robust export business from that geography.
In the light of a current, this is also a question asked by a student.
Uh-huh.
In the light of a current economy crisis, I would like to know what your thoughts are on the president's plan of economic recovery. Do you believe that the corporate tax hikes are the part of the solution and not? What is your thoughts on this problem?
Well, if you have another 6 hours, I don't know if I'm the one to comment on the president's plan for economic recovery, but I just think that if people are looking for economic recovery, they should eat soup because it'll make them feel better. It'll make them feel better on the inside and the outside.
What is an important factor that you acquired because of being part of Campbell Soup?
An important what?
A benefit that you acquired because of being a part of Campbell Soup.
Okay, I actually think the biggest benefit has been the culture we've created at Campbell's. And we have a culture that is very high integrity, very community oriented. I mean, I'm very proud of the fact that we've decided to stay in Camden. We just invested $93 million to build a new building in Camden, New Jersey, which is a very tough city. We're the United Way. We're the volunteer force. We take that very seriously at Campbell's. It's in our DNA. We just made a declaration in the school systems of Campbell's, of Camden, to reduce childhood obesity and hunger by 50% in the next decade. And we intend to take that into the communities by our plant. We had a camp for children, which was by Philadelphia in South Jersey, where underprivileged kids would come to that camp in the summer. And a team of us from Campbell's decided that we wanted to make that park wonderful for those kids. And so we spent many hours cleaning the pool, painting, clearing parking lots and making ball fields, and then we gave them all the soup they wanted and juice and goldfish for lunch. And, you know, but for some of these kids, spending one day at Soupy Island, and that's the name of the camp, believe it or not, we didn't name it, one day at Soupy Island, some of them played back that that's the highlight of their summer. So that's the kind of company I work for and that I will be leading, and I'm very proud of that.
What changes do you make in your product to appeal to international marketing?
I think that the challenge is, because we have such a big business in North America and most of our resources are concentrated there, the challenge is we do have an international division, and we've got to make sure that we are appropriating the significant amount of resources to be able to grow there profitably. And so that is a challenge I'll be tackling with my team.
This is a question from one of the students. Personal career, what were some of your obstacles you had to overcome?
Oh, that's a good one. My mother would kill me if I ever used the word obstacle. She said use opportunity. And I think that really is the attitude. I think, you know, suffice it to say, I was one of the first women to come into the food business in the mid-70s. In sales at Procter & Gamble. I started in the business carrying a bag, and I remember walking into a grocery store, and the store manager came up to me and said, "Excuse me, do you work for Legs?" And I said, "With these legs, are you kidding me?" The point is I learned to use a sense of humor, because there, you know, cultural change is slow, and quite frankly, I like to think of myself as being a pioneer. And I guess a pioneer doesn't necessarily see obstacles, they see opportunity.
How can you sustain EPS growth with average sales increases of 2.87?
You can't. And that's why a step change in profitable net sales growth is my number one challenge and priority.
Gluten-free products are becoming more popular for health reasons. What are your plans for growing market?
We actually do have a number of recipes in our product line that are gluten-free. I think we have to do a better job marketing that. And the Wolfgang Puck line that we have is also gluten-free.
Another one on health. Please comment further on your company's plan to make food healthier, particularly in regard of sodium levels.
Well, I think I talked to you a little bit about the fact that we are on a journey to continue to reduce sodium in our products. Again, we have now over 200 products on the market that have either reduced sodium or heart healthy levels of sodium, of which over 100 are soup. So we feel right now we're in a position where we've given the consumer a scale choice if they're interested in sodium reduction. There's also vegetable nutrition, and many of our foods have at least a full serving of vegetables, and people don't get enough vegetables today. So that's something we're all over.
Another question from a student. Do you have to approve of advertising before it is seen on television?
Absolutely. We have a very robust process for advertising, creative development, and approval. But I personally like to see the ads before they go on TV. And I've been known to pull a few if I don't think they're appropriate. But for the most part, we have a very, very impressive team that works on this. And so our advertising has been pretty effective.
How have you handled labor relations?
Labor.
What did I say?
Well, you know, I like to think that we have at Campbell's a great relationship in our plants and in our world headquarters with our employees and our associates, and we work through those issues, you know, one negotiation at a time. But quite frankly, we've had, I think, pretty solid relationships.
Sara Lee has had its problems. Why?
Well, I don't know. I don't work for Sara Lee. I actually think that there are a number of us in the food business that have had issues with this current recession, and we're all navigating through that. I don't know if I'm the person to comment on Sara Lee, though.
Your competitors on international markets, what is Campbell's position against world competition? What is your experience vision?
Okay, well, first of all, in terms of competition, in the food business, it should be in every business, you sleep with one eye open. Mm-hmm. You know, you have, I think competition makes you better at what you do. And so there are a number of large competitors globally that we face, and there's a number of competitors in the United States that we face. And I think that it's really important to understand their business models and to make sure that you're delivering faster, better, and more completely than competition. And so that's how I'll handle that one. And what was the second part? Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, what is your...
The vision. Okay. I am actually, in all honesty, I haven't crystallized the vision totally yet. I was just appointed October 1st, but I can tell you that my team is working diligently on our strategic plan with the board of directors, and we've been doing it over the last several months, and we will be in a position, you know, by the end of our fiscal year to start to unveil some of those opportunities and some of the vision that we see for Campbell's in the next decade.
We now have some fun questions. Are you a cook yourself?
Well, my husband says I'm the best at making reservations. You know, I can cook, although I don't tell him that. No, I actually like to cook when I have time. I really don't have a lot of time, especially these days. But he's a great cook. And so I haven't starved, and neither have my children. And my children are great cooks, and my mother's a great cook. See, I didn't have to learn.
You have to guess who this question is from. How did you find such a wonderful, handsome, tremendous husband?
You know what? His good looks are only exceeded by his humility.
Okay, thanks.
That was fun and informative and everything we could all hope for. And the fact that Denise just flew back from Australia, I think it's something we should be very grateful for, that she decided to come and speak to us here today. So we'll see you next in 2 weeks.